This is an extract from the Nature podcast. For the full show, head to nature.com/nature/podcast.
To stop the world heating up, we need to limit the amount of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. The obvious way to do this is to stop pumping it up there in the first place. The quicker global emissions fall to zero, the lower the temperature rise we commit our planet to. But cutting emissions isn't the only way to stop greenhouse gases building up. What if we could actually remove CO2 from the atmosphere? There are plenty of ideas for these negative emissions technologies. They range from the simple, planting trees, to the high-tech, building machines that actively suck CO2 from the air. But while the ideas themselves are still somewhat speculative, they're actually built into our plans for the world's climate future. In Paris in 2015, the world agreed to keep global warming to well under 2 degrees, with a goal of just 1.5 degrees. But the world's already warmed by one whole degree. Just cutting emissions may not be enough. We may need negative emissions to reach even the less ambitious 2-degree target, and the scale may be huge. Here's environmental scientist Joe House.
The scale of greenhouse gas removal, these negative emissions, is really large. So most of the global scenarios that were included in the most recent Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change assessment indicate just to get there to the 2 degrees target, you'll need several hundred gigatons of carbon dioxide removal. I've seen figures that it's equivalent to about 17 years worth of current emissions.
Removing these levels of carbon dioxide poses serious challenges. Take one of the most commonly considered negative emissions approaches, bioenergy with carbon capture and storage, or BECCS. BECCS would burn biomass for energy and then capture and store the CO2 before it entered the atmosphere. But the amount of land that certain scenarios suggest might be required for BECCS is truly vast.
It can be from kind of zero amount of BECCS to about 700 million hectares of BECCS in some of the scenarios. And to put that in context for your listeners, that's about twice the size of India. So some of these scenarios include massive areas of land use change.
Changing land use on such scales would pose a huge technical hurdle. But in a comment piece out this week, philosopher Dominic Lenzi suggests that there are other concerns that need careful consideration.
There's a very real chance of conflicts with other land use goals, such as global food security, water, and of course, biodiversity. So there can be really sharp trade-offs created by this kind of negative emissions demand.
Many negative emissions approaches raise important ethical questions about how we use vast amounts of land then. These ethical questions in turn raise difficult legal questions. That's according to environmental lawyer Jonathan Church.
Issues of, you know, land rights and ensuring people aren't exploited, people who live in, you know, off the forests. And a lot of these ethical issues run into those issues of how to ensure that the law, particularly in the developing world, is robust enough to deal with a lot of the consequences that could come out of the expansion of negative emissions.
The problem, Dominic argues in his comment piece, is that these questions simply aren't being asked. While negative emissions are an implicit part of many plans to limit global warming, he believes that their implications are not considered when it comes to crucial climate negotiations.
I would say that many policymakers would not be aware of the requirements of negative emissions. They certainly weren't, it seems, during the Paris negotiations. It really throws into question the idea that we're doing clear-sighted policy making and policy assessment if we don't really appreciate the ethical implications of what we're talking about.
And this isn't just a problem for policymakers. Jonathan, who works at environmental NGO Client Earth, feels that the law is also playing catch-up with these considerations. To some extent, he feels, there just isn't a full enough understanding of the potential risks and gains of different approaches. And for a scientist like Joe, bringing these considerations into the discussion on negative emissions would be a welcome development.
And it's essential to bring in the social sciences, philosophy, and different groups of people. Because at the end of the day, you know, models can look at maybe technology, but actually implementation and the effect that has will depend on these more important socioeconomic aspects.
How have our societies weigh up these socioeconomic aspects? One thing is clear. Negative emissions are no magic bullet allowing us to avoid cutting carbon dioxide emissions. Even with stringent cuts starting today, negative emissions may still be required to limit global warming. And if we don't start cutting emissions soon, we may be faced with even starker choices.
The later we start to decarbonize our economies, the more negative emissions we'll need, and the more severe the likely risks are. The longer we wait, the worse the consequences will be, and the sharper the trade-offs. And that's really the point, that we should be starting now and thinking about negative emissions, not delaying and then thinking about negative emissions at 2050, say. Then we're really limited to a set of scenarios that are all quite bad.
Negative emissions, I guess, are a way of bailing water out of the bathtub before it overflows. So the main thing is you turn off those taps, and we do that as fast as we can. I guess the analogy of bailing water out is a little too kind, because we don't know if these buckets hold water.
That was Jonathan Church of Client Earth, and before him, Dominic Lenzi of the Mercator Research Institute in Germany, and Joe House, who's based at Bristol University in the UK. Find Dominic's comment piece at nature.com/news. And for more on the technological side of greenhouse gas removal, Joe contributed to a recent Royal Society report on the topic. Find that at royalsociety.org.